friends of TMS, good morning! 8-8-0s. This is Kevin McDonald from KITH. That stands for Kids in the... I never know what the H is. Kids in the something good. And you're listening to Too Much Scrolling! That's what TMS stands for! I'll see you in the future!
Good morning!
Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for November 12th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
And I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, Chip, finally, this week, Disney Plus is coming to our streaming boxes. We have so much entertainment to talk about this week.
We do. 30 Helens agree with that, Steve.
Yeah, that's your scale? We're going to make a scale of Helens now?
Well, it's from Kids in the Hall, Steve.
That's awesome. Thank you to our friends at CF3 for bringing us that fun intro from Kevin McDonald from the Kids in the Hall. Good stuff.
Oh, it's very, very good stuff.
Film at 11. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see, and I didn't, so you can't spoil it. You saw Dr. Sleep in the theaters this week.
Yes, I did see. And it stars, of course, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Steve.
Yes.
And he has the Force. And he has exiled himself to Tatooine.
Because he's dangerous.
He is. Uh-huh. And there is another person who has the Force also.
A young person.
And she communicates with him.
And he's protecting her from forces that might want to hurt her.
The Sith, Steve. I think I've seen Star Wars before.
So Dr. Sleep.
He's protecting her from the Sith.
Okay, so let's be clear on this. Dr. Sleep is not actually a Star Wars movie about Obi-Wan Kenobi protecting Luke Skywalker in the desert of Tatooine.
Well, they're not using lightsabers in this one, Steve.
But this is very similar in story, isn't it? The story of young Danny Torrance, the boy from The Shining, all grown up, and now he's finding other kids who have The Shining and trying to protect this young girl.
Yes, in fact, I left this asking, was this a follow-up to Stanley Kubrick's movie, The Shining, or to Stephen King's book on The Shining, who also had the follow-up book, Dr. Sleep.
Right.
And the person in front of me, the couple in front of me, said, well, both. But there's a lot of Kubrick imaging going on here.
Yes, they recreated so many of those original Kubrick scenes and showed us those memories, that nostalgia for those movies, that I think that this is really a sequel to the movie more than the book.
Yeah, and this is a fair follow-up to that. I don't think this is a classic like the movie Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Okay.
But I really enjoyed this because you're kind of revisiting a little bit. You're seeing, what really happened to him. You know, your life certainly would have changed dramatically if you had, Jack Nicholson, heading after you with an axe.
Right.
And, he passes away and their life has to, him and Shelley Duvall have to go and live in Florida. They got to kind of figure out how to start life over again.
Mm-hmm.
But what we do learn is that, The Shining, the Force, is still around him, and he is going to learn to use it. And he's got, ultimately, the equivalent of Bruce Willis shows up, Steve.
Oh, no.
As a Force ghost. To
like good Bruce Willis, like moonlighting Bruce Willis, or like cop-out Bruce Willis?
Well, he's not Bruce Willis, Steve, okay. But he's a gentleman who was in The Shining. And he comes in and he shows up as, as a Force ghost. And he basically shepherds him. He trains him on how to use the Force.
Wait, Obi-Wan Kenobi is getting training from a Force ghost?
Steve, Qui-Gon Jinn was still around. And there are people, there are ways to live after death, Steve.
Watch me cut this man in half.
This movie is not a scary movie.
Okay.
I do think that there is a creepy element to it. Certainly there is some follow-up to the movie. But this is not an 80s slasher film. There's nothing there that's ultimately there to really, really gross you out. Although there are some scenes that, this is a creepy world.
Okay.
This falls right into like Castle Rock feel. Good. And things of that nature. I think they do a really good job at telling this story. And it is. I mean, you ultimately have your Rey, but she has a little bit of training.
Uh-huh.
And she is super strong with the Force. And I think that you're going to leave this going, oh, that was okay. I think people are going to be very happy with this film. I don't think this is a classic.
Okay.
You don't have to revisit it a million times.
I'm not going
to
buy several copies of this like I have The Shining from Kubrick.
No.
Okay.
No, nothing like that.
I've bought several different copies of that movie because that was a fantastic, stunning piece of cinema.
Well, I do think that they fall back on a lot of the imagery that made The Shining The Shining. And that's too bad. But there is a wonderful bar scene that comes out, and okay. What you're doing is you're learning a little bit about this house that may not have been in the book. So they end up revisiting that, and then you have these the Sith who feed off of the Force, and so you get to learn a little bit about that too. I'm using all this imagery not to shade this film. I think this film can stand on its own,
okay.
And I think that if you're looking for entertainment and you want to go and you finish watching Castle Rock, man, this is right there. This is pretty good.
Excellent.
And let me give one last part about it. Dr. Sleep, because he has the Force, the Shining, he has a way of dealing with death. And that is what the sleep is death. And he takes a job that it is in a basically a hospice type of facility. And I think this is a really touching part. I think probably maybe the best part of the scenes of it is, it's a special type of person that can sit with someone who is, getting ready to pass, and then comfort them and let them move to the next stage.
Wow.
And so that's a lovely part of this, and it's certainly not part of the story. It's just sort of the background of it. And I think that is probably one of the strongest parts of this film.
All right. I will go see this. I do have a passion for everything that Stephen King has put together. Don't answer this if it's a spoiler.
Sure.
But is there as much psychological pain in this story as there was in The Shining?
That is the background of this.
That
is the thrust of this this film.
That is the one thing that Stephen King can write better than anything else is mental health and how a person who is struggling with mental health can affect the entire group around them. I look forward to
I think all of
one.
These new Stephen King films really they do it really well.
Okay.
This is so different than the films that we saw, in the 80s and the 90s, where they were just slasher films or whatever they were. These are so much better. Maybe Misery got it really, really well. Mm-hmm. But most of the other films, there's a reason why we're remaking them.
So on your chip scale, 1 to 100?
I would say 60.
Really? I was expecting a 70 out of you for that one.
Well,
interesting.
Well, there you go.
I will see that one eventually. One day I will see that movie. This week, though, you and I both got a chance to open up our Apple TV Plus app that all dropped on us last week, and we got to see 4 episodes of the miniseries For All Mankind.
So let me ask you. So as a person who owns an Apple TV and an Apple iPhone and stuff like that, I got a year's worth of Apple TV or Apple Plus
included
with no additional cost. So basically you have 1 year to sort of explore this.
Uh-huh.
Did you get the same?
I did not. I got the first week for free, so I have not given them any money yet.
Okay.
But I've said out loud, this is valuable at the price that they've set, which is $5 a month.
Okay.
This is a valuable service. I am enjoying the entertainment of this one program well enough to give them $5 a month for the, 2 month? 2.5 month run of this program. About $12 is perfectly reasonable for this program. And I haven't explored any of the other shows on Apple TV Plus yet.
Okay.
So this one is valuable. I'm willing to pay them for this work.
Well, we explore this in a moment.
Uh-huh. For All Mankind is the show that I really am passionate about on Apple TV. This is a historical where we...
This is a, kind of a what if.
It's a what if.
All right, so this is Ronald D. Moore. Mm-hmm. Ronald D. Moore was the gentleman who put together Battlestar Galactica. Did I say gentleman, Steve?
Yes, you did. Remake.
The person.
The remake of Battlestar Galactica. Not that 70s campy sci-fi, the really good sci-fi channel Battlestar Galactica that we keep going back to. We have gone back to Battlestar Galactica over and over again in the last 5 years.
Well, the Cylons, they told us they had a plan,
they
Steve.
They had a plan.
They told us, but... Maybe they didn't have a plan. Maybe Ronald D. Moore's team of writers didn't have a plan.
It seems like they have a plan here. It seems like NASA has a plan on this one.
Well, this is the background of this story is this is the height of the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
The space race is going on. And if you remember, we had John F. Kennedy say, "We are going to land a man on the moon."
Uh-huh.
And, this didn't turn out the way that our current history ended up. There is a twist to it. What is the twist?
Right. In our history, the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong, got there 1969. In this story, that mission was delayed by 2 weeks. So instead of Neil Armstrong being the first man on the moon, a Soviet cosmonaut was the first human to set foot on the moon.
And for our younger listeners, which you may not realize, in fact, we may not have been born or babies at the time.
I was not born yet.
Well, what that meant was the national pride, the mm-hmm. ego of it was incredibly deflated by that. And so at the time, we thought, as the American people, that communism was working, that they may have found a better way of working. And we did not, at that point, know the atrocities that they had performed on their people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, on Hitler's level.
Yeah.
And so we're thinking, oh my goodness, we're in war. So Vietnam is going on, where basically the Soviets and the United States had funded two sides, and they're warring each other, and we're actually part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the space race is going on. We have now not been to the moon first. The cosmonauts made that landing, and they said, you know, I can't remember what it was. It was basically for Lenin and all sorts of other stuff. Well, all of a sudden, the United States goes into panic mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I initially thought is this was going to be a really strong story about the pressure. It was as if the space race never ended. Like, from that moment to today, we're still fighting in the space race.
Mm-hmm.
But what we got was a backstory that just became the front story. And I was kind of concerned with it. Not because the story didn't need to be told. It was so overpowering to this narrative, which I think is really the big story.
Right. The turn that happens here in this now fictional history, this history that did not happen in our timeline, this alternative history, is the cosmonauts then landed a second time on the moon, and the cosmonaut who got out of the ship that time was a female human being.
Yeah, and at that point, the United States decided they were going to put, the entire story turns into, let's put together a group of female astronauts to go land on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a very interesting take on this, and it's certainly a story that could be worthy to go on, but it really overpowers all the other shows.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back, and for our young people who do not realize what was going on at the time, this was a time when the Equal Rights Amendment was being shopped around. If you ever listened to Held Ready's I Am Woman, Hear Me Roar,
mm-hmm.
this is very much of this type of era. Women were choosing to work. A lot of real estate agents at the time, if you think about sort of that period, a lot of, you know, women were becoming doctors. They were choosing careers versus just families, or choosing both. And that was a readjustment of the United States on how we were working at the time. Now, for our current young people, they're living in a world where there are more women going to college than men.
Right.
More women will get a master's degree, and more women will get PhDs mm-hmm. than men right now. But for that generation, say 40 years ago, mm-hmm. 50 years ago.
50 years ago, yeah.
This was unique. And so our story is all wrapped around these groups training, to become astronauts, and sort of how the women were inspiring girls to also get involved in STEM, which is a very interesting take and certainly could be part of the story. But like I said, it becomes the story at that point.
It becomes overwhelmed by that. Yeah, I don't disagree with you on that. I still love this story, the way that it's told. But I don't disagree that what's their motivation? Why are they in this space race? That is really undercut by all of the passion of we need to have these female astronauts be the part of this space race.
Now, and Ronald D. Moore is really good at getting to the paranoia, the stress at the time. I mean, Battlestar Galactica's, was it 33, was the one where they kept having to jump past the Cylons. That was really good. Uh-huh. And early on in these episodes, you could just feel the control center. You know, they're trying to land
Apollo 11.
Apollo 11.
Yeah.
It's not working the way they want it to. In fact, they thought they lost them.
Uh-huh.
And so there's all this stuff going on. You can just feel how much the pressure is just, you know, it's right there.
Uh-huh.
In addition, what Ronald D. Moore does really well is there's all these little side stories going on.
Uh-huh.
So there is the female who is the engineer who was working with Von Braun. Von Braun would go over to this family's house, have dinner, they would talk. She was there soaking up the conversations. And because she was soaking, it just spurred her imagination. And she was, as women were at the time, sort of outside the circle, but she had the answers and eventually moved her way into the circle to be able to help make those decisions better.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing how much your, as a youth, what you're exposed to determines on what you choose to do growing up. Fascinating part of that.
I am loving this show. I really suggest a lot of people should check this out. I also suggest that you should go back and read the Lady Astronaut series. I talked about this a few months ago. Mary Robinette Kowal wrote a story very similar in tone to this, where in the 1950s, an asteroid came down and struck the Earth and destroyed the infrastructure of the United States. The Washington, D.C., New York City, and the Carolinas are completely obliterated by this asteroid.
Well, that's terrible, Steve.
And the scientist who realizes that this asteroid is going to be a planet killer, that the Earth is dying, that the humans have to escape the Earth, that sparks the space race of the 1950s. And yes, once again, just like in this story, it's decided that female astronauts are really important to this equation. And so they form, just like in the story of For All Mankind, they form a team to go into space and to solve the problem. And that's where I see your problem with For All Mankind. The problem is really put on the back burner for the adventure of these characters.
Mm-hmm.
In The Lady Astronaut, the problem is dire. There's an absolute end date where the world is going to not support human life and we have to leave. And that passion, that pressure is throughout the story.
And For All Mankind is a war story, really. I mean, you've got the Soviets and the United States, and they're not fighting, but they are on the brink of war. And that pressure is all around them. And I think that gets kind of taken away. Now, I could be wrong. We're only four episodes in.
Correct.
And what could happen is that's all backstory to help lead to us to the next part of it.
Quite possibly.
But we'll see. We'll see. Anyway.
I'm enjoying it.
Very interesting. Apple TV is Apple TV Plus, excuse me, the service where you can get that.
Yeah, it's the weekend. We're a week in on it, and I'm enjoying it thus far. I'm also enjoying Castle Rock Season 2 on Hulu, Episode 5. I'm now halfway through this series. It is a 10-episode series.
This is excellent, isn't it?
This is excellent storytelling. Mm-hmm. This is excellent writing, and the acting in this is phenomenal. Again, this is a Stephen King based story, but is not written by Stephen King.
Yes.
But it is an homage to all of that passion and all of those feelings that Stephen King gives in his writing. And it's about mental health. It's about the
imagine being that little girl who is, what a terrible place to be. You've got a mother who obviously has some severe mental health issues, and she's going, and you're in this crazy area. that all you know sort of heightens all that stuff going on.
And episode 5 is all about the backstory of where Annie Wilkes' mental health issues started, and it is a very deep, very emotional conversation about how we affect each other and how we affect everybody around us with our decisions.
Sure.
I don't want to give anything away.
Well, that's okay, because I am maybe through the fourth or right at the end of the fourth episode. So I that'll be something I'll catch up on this week. Now, and just on that, you know, I started the Watchmen series.
Yeah.
But the Watchmen series has been put on back burner because...
There's so many other things.
I mean, we've got life, Steve. Yes. We can't spend all of our time watching television.
Are you kidding me? I've got auditions for the winter musical today. Are you kidding me? Yes. Life is getting in the way of my television.
All right, Steve. So the movies that are coming out this week, let's start with something fun.
Good. I didn't know what you were going to say there. The first movie is Charlie's Angels, the remake of the remake of the remake of the original 70s campy adventure story with three women kicking butt and taking names.
And this isn't. This seems to be abandoning some of that camp.
A little bit.
It seems much more on the, maybe on the 007 series.
Yes.
Where it's a little more serious.
Yeah.
And they've got these three beautiful women, and certainly they are... assassins. They're killers, Steve.
Uh-huh. I look forward to this one. I loved the remake with Cameron Diaz and the other two girls whose names flip my mind because Cameron D. Okay. But this one is Elizabeth Banks, who is directing this one as well as being a part of the action.
Okay. So there we go. We got that one up there. But the really, really, this is my movie that I want to see so bad this week, because this one is one I'm actually looking forward to.
The next one.
Yes, this next one.
Ford versus Ferrari is the movie that you are passionate about this week.
This stars Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
And a Christian Bale.
Who is no longer Bruce Wayne. But he was for a long, long time.
Well, you know, he seems like an angry race car driver.
Yeah, I think he plays angry really well. When I've seen some behind-the-scenes footage, Christian Bale's really good at being angry.
This is the story of Lee Iacocca and Ford funding a race car to try to usurp Ferrari's dominance on a race circuit.
Interesting.
Ferrari had the best, and well, Shelby. If you've heard of Shelby Mustangs and you know Shelby cars,
sure.
Yeah, he was the gentleman who put together that race car to compete. And you know, Christian Bale plays the driver, who is the crazy person who's going to win this race for us. This looks so exciting.
It really does.
You know, the United States. Manufacturing seems to have a different way of looking at automobiles than some of the European counterparts.
Yeah.
So anyway, this looks fascinating.
I look forward to this one. Even though I don't care anything about cars, this looks like a good movie with good storytelling. There's a movie called The Good Liar. This features Dame Helen Mirren and Sir Ian McKellen. This is a very British story about some elderly people who are finding love and maybe, just maybe, not telling each other the truth of their existence.
There could be a con going on, Steve.
Uh-huh.
This looks like it's a very interesting film.
Yes. Notice how we slowed down a lot from the race movie when we're talking about this one. I think this is going to be a good movie. There's a movie called Waves. This is the story of a suburban family and their troubles. They have issues in life.
And this looks pretty good. It seems like it's going to be lost in in all the other films.
Yeah.
And certainly it looks like, you know, it's like, we got a demographic, we're going to have to point towards one.
Maybe.
Well, I mean, think of what, you know, the Helen Mirren and Ian McKellen film.
For the boomers.
Okay, yeah. Boomer. And then, it, you know, you think of Ford Ferrari for like the Adrenaline Junkies.
Yeah.
And Charlie's Angels certainly is the pop film.
Yeah.
So, yes, there's a lot of it.
You are right. There is a documentary called Scandalous, The Untold Story of the National Enquirer.
Well, there's going to be a UFO and Bigfoot.
Bat Boy. Bat Boy's on the cover again.
Yes. And you know, if you remember, the National Enquirer, you know, basically was the lead researchers on the Monica Lewinsky story.
Investigative journalism.
So in between all this crazy, like, we got to sell newspapers type of stuff, they have a little bit of journalism going on.
They are really going out there and trying to find the story, too.
So this is interesting.
Yeah, I look forward to this one. The trailer on this one looks really good. There is a movie called The Warrior Queen of Genasi that comes out. This one looks really good.
This looks excellent. And this is about the East Indian Company basically coming into an area into India.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to basically take over from this queen.
Yeah.
And so she's going to defend her people. I don't know if this is going to be a large release, but if you get a chance to see this, this looks really like a really good film.
Talk about a movie that has a built-in audience. There's a lot of filmgoers who are into history, and this is a historical piece about a real mutiny that happened in 1857. I look forward to that one. There's a movie called All Rise, or is it called Monster? This is one of those movies that has two different titles. It was released originally in 2018 and being re-released essentially with a new name, with a new focus. This is from the 1999 novel Monster by Walter Dean Myers, the story of a young 17-year-old who's in jail.
And this is once again maybe one of those plays that's been filmed.
Yes.
So this is a one-man play.
Basically.
And I mean, that's what it looks like from the trailer. But he is a gentleman who is incarcerated, and he is trying to film his story.
And he was called a monster in court by the prosecutor, and he's taking that to heart and finding a way to find out who he is through the course of this story. I look forward to that one. It's a good book from 1999, 20 years ago. Amazing. There is a movie called Mickey and the Bear. This is a young lady who is struggling with her father's addiction and just life in general.
Well, certainly not to dismiss this film, but do we really want to go through this story? This is a tough story.
There's a lot of passion here. There's a lot of fear and a lot of things that are happening in a lot of families across the country. Do we want to find entertainment in this and watch a movie about it? I don't.
Well, there you go. So if you want to just turn on the television and go to a streaming service, Steve.
Time for streaming. Should we make a new segment for this? Is there a new... Are we getting into the streaming genre so much now? There's so many opportunities to watch stuff. Is that separate from going to the movies?
Well, I think that could be the case. But a lot of the streaming films are being released. They have a theatrical release for a week or two to be able to qualify for awards.
And Disney has a different look at it. We'll get to that in a second. You want to, but you haven't gotten to, Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan Season 2. This is on Amazon Prime. It's been out for 12 days now, Chip, and you're behind.
Well, it is, but we have so many other things, and I think that's where it really came down to. When Watchmen was released, when Castle Rock was released, For All Mankind was released, along with all the other things that you could possibly pick up, I only have so many free hours during a day.
Mm-hmm.
And even to get through like Castle Rock and catch up is tough. I mean, most of us are busy. This looks really good. This, of course, is what happens to Jim after he left Dunder Mifflin in Scranton, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
He seems to have a whole different life, Steve.
Became a CIA analyst under the name Jack Ryan, whom we've seen in so many other movies. This is the Tom Clancy character that keeps coming back.
And renamed this season Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan.
Uh-huh, yes. The first season was good. My wife watched it, and I was in the room.
It was excellent.
It is not my genre, but it was good.
This is going to be good.
Okay, good. Then, today, you can start watching all of that stuff from Disney+. The Disney streaming service starts today.
Disney basically released a smorgasbord of films and series that are, they could just have released them to the theater.
In addition to the entire back catalog of everything from Disney, except for Song of the South, they have all of these new things that I am more than willing to give them my money to watch.
So instead of releasing Lady and the Tramp to the theater, which it could have been released,
very much,
it's going to be part of the streaming service.
Yep, starting today, you can watch the new live-action/CGI Lady and the Tramp.
Well, everybody's been waiting for it, Steve.
Of course, they have. Spaghetti at the ready. There is a new Christmas movie called Noel. This is the story of Santa's kids, a son and a daughter, who are looking after the family business.
And this is very much in the playful spirit of maybe Elf.
Yes.
But this stars who, Steve? Because all the kids love these people.
Anna Kendrick and Bill Hader.
My kids are totally eating this up.
I am ready for this.
I have a feeling this will be watched multiple times by multiple young families.
Just like Elf. I think this is going to go on that list. Kind of like Fred Claus. Did you ever watch Fred Claus? That is another son of Santa trying to
take
over. Was
that Kelsey Grammer?
I don't know if it was Kelsey Grammer, but it was Vince Vaughn as the bumbling son of Santa.
Uh-huh.
So this time it's Bill Hader, and I have high expectations for this one.
And, you know, Arthur Christmas also worked that way.
There you go. There's another one.
So it just seems like this is a story that just gets told over and over and over, Steve. Right.
Speaking of which, brings us to Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars!
Well, everyone loves Star Wars, Steve.
Yes, they do.
Tell me it's Jar Jar Binks. Tell me it's Jar Jar Binks.
Nope. Sorry. Next time, it might be Jar Jar Binks. This time, this is The Mandalorian, the new series that is coming out on Disney Plus that we've been talking about since we were at Star Wars Celebration. This is created by Jon Favreau.
He's so money and he doesn't even know it, Steve.
He's so passionate about this. He is super excited about this program.
And this looks like the Star Wars story that Disney really wants. They want a story that doesn't have Princess Leia in it,
right?
Doesn't have Han Solo, doesn't have Luke Skywalker.
Yep.
Basically, something to explore the universe of Star Wars that people have passion with.
I think this is going to fit that bill perfectly based on the trailer, based on all the conversation that I've been listening to from all the different podcasts talking about this. I think this is the winner.
Well, you look at this list of directors, Steve.
Dave Filoni, Bryce Dallas Howard, and your favorite, Taika Waititi, are going to direct.
That's
going to
be pretty good, man.
It's going to be pretty good. He plays the voice of one of the robots, too, man.
Does he really?
So he's going to...
Does he really?
He's one of the robots that's going to be talking on screen, man.
All right, so a lot of this looks like it's, you know, very much like the Marvel Universe.
Yep.
Universe building in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, finally.
So I think there's going to be a lot of fun and playfulness there. Steve, yes. Steve will probably enjoy this.
I will.
Steve, that's not the only cool show that they're going to have.
The Steve-based shows continue with Encore. This is a reality show, which I don't generally like reality shows, but this one has a great twist. The idea of Encore is reuniting the cast of a high school musical and having them perform the same show that they did in high school again with Broadway directors, Broadway costumes, and seeing the behind the scenes of how that comes together 20 years after.
And our host is Kristen Bell.
Of course. America's sweetheart.
Well, she's so awesome. And this just looks, as we were watching the trailer for this, I mean, your heart just goes out because you were this young person that was in whatever musical or whatever play you were in when you were young.
Brigadoon.
And then life happened and life could be very generous to you or life could beat you down a little bit. And then you have all the other things going on in life. You know, your children don't know the person you were when you were young.
Right.
Well, maybe for a good reason, but maybe for but you know, all the challenges they're going through, you walk through them too. And how lovely that this show looks so good.
Yeah, I think that this might be my favorite reality show ever. I think that the idea of this is
before
brilliant.
It's even streamed, you've already beaten
before I've even seen a minute of this, just based on the trailer, just based on that storytelling, those real life storytelling moments that we see in the trailer. I think that they've got something really strong here.
I think they do too, and I think that many families will enjoy watching this.
Yeah, then the one that I'm not quite so sure about is called High School Musical : The Musical : The Series.
Yeah, it gets, kind of gets absurd. And this is sort of it takes the Office approach, the television series The Office approach, where this is not a true story.
But they film it like it's a documentary.
And so a high school is going to put on High School Musical. And then there's going to be all the, well, you know,
the drama that goes along with putting on a drama. Is that what you're going to say?
I think that's going to be it. So maybe young people will enjoy this.
Maybe. I have very low expectations on that one. The final piece on the cherry on top of the Disney Plus.
I'm moving my hands around,
yes,
Steve.
You are.
I'm moving my hands around.
The cherry on top of the Disney Plus pie that we are being offered today is a show called The World According to Jeff Goldblum.
Now, yes, and Jeff Goldblum being the most Goldblum.
He is the most Goldblumiest human on Earth, for sure.
So Steve and I are moving our wrist around and talking with our hands, just like Jeff does.
And just sharing non sequiturs. Just stream of consciousness thinking in this trailer is amazing.
So it's kind of going, you know, there.
If we were a sushi joint, what part of the sushi place would I be?
That's right.
What? What are you talking about, Jeff Goldblum? This looks like so much fun.
And the beauty is he's a very joyful person to be around.
Yep.
Certainly a very interesting person. And I would say that, you know, we could probably follow William Shatner around a long time ago or Adam West.
Uh-huh.
You know, just
that
a care
of acting.
Yeah, that you know, just unique voice pattern, unique hand movements, his body movements. I mean, you can watch any Goldblum movie and you go, oh, that's exactly who he is.
Including you rewatched Transylvania 65,000 this week for some silly reason.
And all he wanted to do was
Goldblum.
He just wanted to have dinner with this lady, and it's all these
just
things
Jeff
happen.
Goldblum. I look forward to that. I look forward to Disney Plus. I will give Disney my money for this.
My kids have requested this.
Yeah.
And I think that this is a good time to kind of bring it up. All right, Steve, if you have Netflix,
mm-hmm,
and you have Hulu,
mm-hmm,
and you decide you're going to have Disney Plus that could have Hulu part of it, because it's you can get it was it $8 or $12?
Correct. To add your Hulu with commercials.
So if you add...
And ESPN Plus is in there, too.
Yeah. So and then how many of these can we have? Because you only can watch so many...
You forgot Amazon Prime.
Well,
Amazon Prime is on that list as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many of these shows can you watch at one given time? And that's going to be your challenge, is that you're going to have to become much more comfortable with picking something up.
Yeah.
So I'll have Disney Plus for 3 months, and then I'll take on Netflix for 2 months, and then I'll come back to Disney Plus, that type of thing.
That might be the way to do it. They certainly want to hook you for the whole year, and they'll take 2 months off of the cost if you pay for a full year.
Okay.
But yeah, that might be the way to do it, to just go in when that one show drops, watch that one show, that one movie, and then drop them at the end of the month.
And you're not going to feel guilty by not watching Amazon Prime right now.
Right.
Because, you know, it just comes part of, you have all the other services that come part of that.
And they don't have that one stellar show right now. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel is not new right now.
Well, they have the Jack Ryan. The
Jack Ryan is there.
And that's a big deal, too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, so they will continue to figure out ways of hooking you in for a period of time.
Disney? Really?
Well,
Disney figuring out ways to take my money?
Let's just say...
This is new.
Let's hope. Let's hope these are good and worthy of your time.
That's what rebellions are built on. Hope.
Book it.
Brings us to our book. And our book of the week, you brought a title to me a few weeks back and said, Steve, this has the word time in the title. You like time travel stories?
And in fact, when I was reading it, I kind of glanced through it. It just looked like a time travel book.
Uh-huh.
But
because
it wasn't.
The cover certainly seems like a time travel story. This is called The Price of Time. It's written by Tim Tignor.
And it was just released not too long ago.
Yes, and it's not a time travel story, Chip.
It isn't. It's a story that is a very interesting story. In fact, we should go ahead and say up front, when we started reading this book, what I immediately got was Michael Crichton, Dan Brown. It's just going to be a quick roller coaster.
Yes.
Go for this race and enjoy it for what it is.
Yes.
I will say you can leave it with that same type of feeling, except for the beginning seems so promising.
Strong.
And then at the end, it just kind of turned into a regular book.
Yes. This is the story of a group of scientists who discover a way to live forever. Immortality is as simple as taking a shot of this medication every 6 months, and you can live forever.
And what ends up happening is they're all bright people. They're going to figure out what to do with this. They said people will pay whatever they wanted to live forever. But they determined that they were not going to give it to mankind. Because it would just use up all the resources. There's all sorts of...
There's so many great reasons that the author gives here for how that would destroy society.
And what they don't mention is one that I knew from a long time ago. One of the greatest gifts you can give is eventually you die and all your bad ideas die with them. And so, you know, it kind of lets the future generations, I mean, be the future generations.
Right.
Well, anyway, the story starts out so promising. Instead of just offering to everyone or selling it to all the wealthy, they decide they're going to target to one wealthy person who has enough wealth for all the inner circle of scientists.
Uh-huh.
And that person says, yes, I'll pay for this.
Mm-hmm.
And so now this group of people, they're very, very wealthy. And within 100 years, it just doesn't turn out to be what they want.
It's not even 100 years. It's not even 100
years. And that's what really gets me, because I was thinking we're going to get this exploration
of
what, you know, what the future would hold.
What
like that.
Would you do if you had all the time in the world, if you knew that you were immortal, what would you do? This is a great premise that really doesn't pay off in this book.
Well, what we get from it is that they decide they're going to live life. Only one of them, I think, determines they're going to stay working
correct
in their career. Everyone else kind of gives up their career. They have all the resources they need, and they start enjoying their lives, as in, you know, doing whatever they need to do.
Laying about. A lot of laying about in this story. There's not a lot of things that they choose to do with all the money in the world and all the time in the world. There's a lot of nothing.
Well, that's too bad for that. What ends up happening is they eventually decide they're going to have to replace themselves. You know, having Steve 100 years from now looks kind of strange. He looks just like he is now.
Vampires work that way. Let's not talk about it too much. I don't eat garlic. And I don't say blah, blah, blah.
That's right. So what ends up happening is they determine they're find people that look like them and they're going to replace them. So that's where it gets kind of dark.
Replace them, as in eliminate the original and take over their identities. Yeah.
And then we get this weird twist where one of them decides they're going to run for president. So what ends up happening is they're off the grid. No one can really follow who they are. But now the equivalent of the CIA or FBI, whoever it is, creates a kind of like they're going to hunt them down.
Well, somebody's hunting them down. This is the Agatha Christie, you know, 10 Little Indians. One at a time, they're being knocked off.
It ends with some wealthy people kind of leaving an island and sailing the Caribbean.
And the mystery just ends.
And it's set up to be like there's going to be this follow-up book.
Yeah.
That was the other thing I got from it. It's like, hey, there's going to be this follow-up. I don't know what else we need to say. This actually has the all the beginnings of a really great story.
Yes. Great premise.
And it could be an interesting movie. It could be an interesting series. But I think they'd have to kind of rewrite some of this stuff.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to need to stretch out the time. Because, you know, we're not even 100 years in. And while certainly things change from 1900 to 2000, and things will change from 2000 to 3000, you know, that's not enough time.
Right.
And anyway, I kind of went in enjoying this book, and at the end, I was just glad it was over. And I'm not saying it's a bad movie. This is certainly a beach read. If you read it, you may enjoy it, but you know, at some point, you're just like, okay, let's get this over with.
The characterization of the protagonist in this story bothered me. He comes out of nowhere and becomes an investigator, investigating what's happening with these people who are disappearing and being replaced, and he never really gets to the heart of the matter of why these people are being replaced.
This is a real book. I want to sell this short. Because, you know, we gave him a bunch of criticism. Tim did a good job on this. I think he's a promising writer. It could be a Dan Brown. He very much could be a Michael Crichton type of person. But on some level, you know, they're just going to have to be a little bit, they're going to get tighter as he writes more.
One criticism I am going to put on Tim, the author here, is he writes most of this book is a third-person narration of all of this story. The narrator is omniscient and knows the feelings of all the characters. And then suddenly, for about one-eighth of this story, somewhere in the middle, we get a first-person narration from the investigator, the protagonist of this story. And then there are actual chapters where that character is in scenes and it's third person narration again, not getting the viewpoint from that character. That's not great writing.
Yeah, well, maybe that's not good editing. Maybe not seeing what was going on.
Some editors missed that for sure.
Sure. Like I said, this is certainly a beach read. And yeah. If we leave it at that, I think we're giving it the place it needs to be. A place where you want to read something fast and light and something that's interesting and grabbing you. And let's just say that, it's okay. It's okay.
And don't expect time travel.
There's no time travel.
No.
Just Eternals.
Nope. That's The Price of Time by Tim Tignor.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know what? I said it was November 12th. Chip, and that means only one thing for me. The countdown to Chicago TARDIS is on. The 20th annual Chicago TARDIS Doctor Who convention is happening in Lombard, Illinois this November 29th through December 1st. We're going through December.
Well, there you go.
Because Thanksgiving is the latest it can possibly be. Do you know that?
No.
That if you look at the calendar, there is no mathematical way for Thanksgiving to be on any date later than November 28th. This is late Thanksgiving year. And so Chicago TARDIS is delayed by a week, too.
Well, how about that?
I'm excited.
All the people who they bring in, they certainly do enjoy this because, it starts on Black Friday, Steve.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Black Friday is
right across from a shopping mall and a Target right there. What possibly? Do your shopping. Come over and see some Doctor Who, Steve.
There's a great list of guests this year. Paul McGann, who was the 8th Doctor. Sylvester McCoy is coming again. I love Sylvester McCoy. I love talking to him. Arthur Darvill is going to be here along with Tosin Cole, and so many. Oh, Katie Manning is coming back. If you haven't had a conversation with Katie Manning yet, you haven't been to Chicago TARDIS. She will talk to anybody. She is the most passionate person I think I've ever met. Louise Jameson is coming back to Chicago TARDIS for the first time in a while. I look forward to talking to her, maybe telling her my Rob story from when we met back in the 90s. Frasier Hines, of course, is perennial. He'll be here. John Leeson, the voice of K-9, is going to be in town, mm-hmm. along with so many others. I'll stop there. But, boy, the list of people that Chicago TARDIS brings in to talk with us, the passionate fans, this is one of my favorite times of the year. This convention, all of these stars are just walking the halls with us and having conversations. This is the most passionate group of people on Doctor Who talking to these stars.
And if you haven't been to this convention and you have interest in doing it, it's big enough,
mm-hmm.
but not too big.
That's it.
And that's the beautiful part about it, is that you will have a chance of running into not only people who enjoy your passion, but you also, the stars, the people who were part of it, from writers to actors, to anyone.
The whole production team.
And then they do panels.
And you can sit and talk with them and have breakfast with them. And there's so many opportunities. If you haven't been to Chicago TARDIS, I really suggest that you do so. Go to chicagotardis.com for all the information. If you need more information than just Doctor Who information, because Chip's making a face, you there's all sorts of other things. Chip, I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve. And just to point out, you did touch two things you really enjoy this week, Star Wars and Doctor Who.
And Stephen King.
Well, there you go. Three things.
That's three. And Disney. And production. And musicals. My God, this show is just all about me.
This is all about you. As it always is,
Steve. 5 years and counting. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip. Pass and flow.
We'll see you in the future.
Hello to my friends at TMS, which stands for I need glasses. It doesn't stand for any glasses, it stands for too much scrolling. Oh, I get it.